Writing news stories about the movement of a play from the Oregon Shakespeare Festival to Broadway proved pretty easy, at least for headline writers this year. The play is called All the Way, so you probably saw the stories about the play going all the way to Broadway. And it went a bit further. Last Sunday night, it went all the way to a Tony Award for the best play on Broadway this year. An additional Tony went to the star, Bryan Cranston, for his portrayal of President Lyndon Johnson in the first year of his presidency. The sequel to All the Way is now in production at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. The Great Society opens next month. Robert Schenken wrote them both, and he's here, our guest in the studio today. Robert Schenken, thanks for joining us.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Robert has been cranking out plays for years now, both spoken and musical, and he's been recognized for his efforts. His Kentucky cycle of one-act plays was the first to receive a Pulitzer Prize for drama before appearing on a New York stage. His other works include 12 full-length plays, 2 musicals, and works for TV and the movies. So I guess the obvious first question is the comparison between winning a Tony and winning a Pulitzer.
Well, and a Pulitzer is a very extraordinary and kind of rare honor, but I have to say it didn't hurt to be on stage Sunday night. I was very happy to be there.
No doubt. I guess I was wondering if you've gone from trophy case to trophy room now. I mean, you're envisioning parts of your house that need remodeling?
Well, you know, I was a Boy Scout as a young man. I still like collecting merit badges, so it's no pain in that regard.
Quite a collection then. You know, you had to believe you had a shot, but when the announcement came, when they said all the way, did you shoot out of your seat?
I did. I was sitting there with my kids holding my daughter's hand. And, you know, you never take any of these things for granted. The play had done very well, obviously, both commercially and critically. But award ceremonies can be fluky. So I was surprised and thrilled and very, very relieved when they called my name.
How long did the parties last? Did you get any sleep Sunday night?
Not too much. I actually closed down the restaurant in Midtown Manhattan. They threw us out about 3:30 in the morning. It was very satisfying.
And then how soon before you got back on a plane to fly back to Oregon?
I was on a plane to Oregon maybe 6 hours later to start rehearsals the next day.
Was that the beginning of rehearsals for the Great Society?
No, actually, we started rehearsals about a week and a half earlier, so I had left my company for 36 hours to be in New York for the Tonys.
So it's clear from the plays you'd already written that there's a deep interest in American history here. I mean, where does this come from? Where in your background did that all surface?
You know, it's really hard to say. I've always enjoyed history as a reader, and I'd like to think there are a few more strings to my bow than simply the history play, but it's a fair assertion that that my writing has a fair amount of history-based material in it. History is just fascinating. What did Faulkner say? History isn't dead. It's not even past. I think that's very true. And I think that in order to really live fully in the present, to understand where we are, you need to understand where we've been.
Now, All the Way was commissioned by the Oregon Shakespeare Festival as part of its American Revolution's history cycle. I'm curious just about the general starting point for plays. I mean, do plays get written generally because of commissions? Do they get written because you got a wild hair and you want to follow that? I mean, what's the usual creative spark?
Both of the above. More often than not, my work is commissioned, but I have also started material just because I was excited about an idea and wanted to get going on it. But more often than not, I've been commissioned and been very grateful to have been commissioned at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival twice now. The first would have been By the Waters of Babylon, and then, of course, most recently, All the Way.
And Handler was another play that of yours that played at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, correct?
That was the very first production of mine at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, and it was Bill Rauch's first production at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival and began this now decade-plus collaboration and relationship for which I am so grateful.
That was before Bill Rauch was the artistic director, correct?
That is correct, okay. Yes. Libby Apple was still artistic director at that time.
Mm-hmm. Well, people certainly got to they got to see Bill Rauch as well. He was up on the stage with the rest of the crew of you and the producers and the stars of All the Way on Broadway. So the country got to hear his name, too, because you said it 3 times.
I wanted to make sure everybody heard that, yes.
But the best director you've ever worked with?
Yes, I would say so, absolutely.
You probably scared a few people in Oregon. Oh, my God, the country's going to know who Bill Rauch is now. They'll take him away.
I don't think Bill's in any danger of being poached. My understanding is he's very, very happy here in Ashland and, of course, happy with the success of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival.
You know, I had asked you before we turned the microphones on about getting back into the rhythm of life here and how well you've been sleeping. The follow-up to the question about how late you stayed at the party on Sunday night, you said you sleep very well here, so the Ashland's a good place for a playwright to work as well.
I love Ashland. I do. I love this physical environment, which you're so fortunate to have, the Rogue River Valley. And I love this company. It's an extraordinary company of artists, really as good as anything anywhere in the country and better than most. And a repertory, a full repertory theater company, so unique now, sadly, so rare.
It is that rare.
It is. It is, absolutely. It's is an expensive, complicated process, and I think most theaters can't afford it or are unwilling to put the effort in that it takes to achieve that level of professionalism.
Robert Schenken is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about the whole process of playwriting and his connection to the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, which produced the play All the Way, which just won a Tony Award on Broadway for Best Play for the season just ending. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange when we come back from a break. Back with Robert Schenken and you in a minute 20. On the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today to Robert Schenken, the writer, the playwright for All the Way, which just won the Tony Award for Best Play on Broadway this year in New York. It premiered two years ago at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, which is now about to put up its sequel, The Great Society. Robert Schenken wrote them both. He's our guest on the Exchange. You can join the discussion at 800-838-3760 around the region. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. I was asking a few minutes ago, Robert, about the process of, you know, how things get written in the first place, whether they're written just because or whether they're written by commission. You said often by commission. Does the commission dictate right down the line the approach? Do you have some wiggle room in there? I mean, for example, you know, what determines whether you're going to go tragic comedy for Lewis and Clark, reach the Euphrates versus a more straighter treatment?
Well, in this case, let's take the commission here at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, the American Revolutions Project. It was very broad-based in its mandate. Essentially, those of us who were invited to participate in the program, the parameters were write a play in which you can make the case that this is based on an event, an individual, an incident, a theme located within the purview of American history. And I was the very first writer that they approached in this regard, and very quickly I knew what I wanted to write about, and that was Lyndon Baines Johnson. I'd been long interested in President Johnson as an individual. He's really almost Shakespearean in size and stature and complexity. I like Bill Moyer's description of LBJ as the 11 most interesting people I ever met was Lyndon Johnson. And you know, as funny as that is, when you talk to people, and I've now talked to a good portion of those who are still alive who knew or worked with President Johnson, and their descriptions of him are often very, very similar. And it is this kind of yin-yang description of something to the effect of, well, he was the most generous, cruel, kind, savage, loyal, treacherous individual I ever met. I mean, really, the complexity of the man is you can't overemphasize it. And so just as a character, I thought this was a fascinating individual. But his presidency, this you know, the first term, the accidental president, which I write about in All the Way, November 63 to November 64, and then his second term, the one after his landslide victory in November 64 over Goldwater, changed this country completely. In many ways, Joe Califano says, we now live in Lyndon Johnson's world. I think he's right. And what's interesting is so few people are really cognizant of that. Lyndon Johnson has been, if he's talked about at all, you know, it's sort of like the crazy aunt locked up in the attic. It's Vietnam. That's what people remember. And one can't, of course, take anything away from his record in Vietnam, which was tragic and disastrous. But his domestic achievements were as amazing and considerable and positive as his record in foreign policy was disastrous and lamentable. I mean, the list of legislation that he achieved is staggering. We're talking about Medicare and Medicaid and civil rights, the 64 Civil Rights Bill, the Voting Rights Bill of 65, Fair Housing Act. We're talking clean air and water. We're talking about public television and radio.
School lunch programs.
School lunch.
Things I've been finding out through other interviews this
poverty
week.
Poverty abatement programs, urban renewal programs. The list goes on. Immigration reform. It's kind of fascinating. All of the issues, the major so-called hot-button issues that the parties fight over today really have their origins in 1964, 1965. It's kind of fascinating and sobering, a little shocking. In some instances, the language hasn't changed very much, and in some languages, of course, and in some ways, the language has become very codified. It's become very, very circumspect, but we're still fighting over the same issues.
There's an email here from Scott, no town given, and he's talking about the dialogue in All the Way. It sounded so authentic, he writes. To what extent did you use the Johnson White House tape recordings in developing it?
I certainly listened to a number of those. Of course, there are thousands of hours of conversations that Lyndon Johnson taped, which are now being digitized and available online. I believe it's through the University of Virginia, and they're fascinating to listen to. And then, of course, you know, J. Edgar Hoover was kind enough to provide us with thousands of hours of tapes. I've listened to a good chunk of these, by no means all, and I certainly have incorporated some of the actual text from these in order to be authentic and get the that real sense of individual, unique. But I've also made up my own dialogue, written scenes. It's this balance one has to maintain when you write a history play. You know, some of it is very, very accurate, and some of it is completely fictionalized, and I take great liberties with chronology, events, dialogue. I put people together who weren't necessarily ever in the same room at the same time saying these things. It's an interesting challenge. I will, and I'm always very careful to say in public, you know, I am not a historian. I'm not writing a documentary. Mm-hmm. I'm a playwright. You come to see my work, to see my point of view on these events.
You have to be a fairly ruthless editor, I would think, in deciding, okay, this gets to stay in because this is good stuff and it works well dramatically, but this stuff, as interesting as it is to me, forget it. It makes bad theater.
Well, there's not only that choice, then there's the even more painful choice of, well, this is actually great stuff and I would really like to use this, but I don't have the time. You know, unlike Mr. Caro, who I'm a great fan, who is writing these enormous volumes. What we're now 4 books into the series, I believe, and these are, you know, these are very substantial tomes, incredibly detailed. I have 2 hours and 44 minutes to tell my story, and unlike Mr. Caro, whose book you can set aside should you feel a little tired or peckish. I need to keep you on the edge of your seat. So I face a very kind of mundane choice often, which is I have a very circumscribed amount of time in which to work. And so some things don't make the cut because I don't have the time for them.
Robert Jenkins, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He is the playwright for All the Way, which won the Tony Award on Broadway this year for Best Play. It had originated 2 years ago at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. The sequel, The Great Society, gets on its feet on the Shakespeare stage next month in Ashland. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area. In Jackson and Josephine counties, the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. I'm not surprised at all you mentioned the Robert Caro books. I had to believe you spent at least a little time in those. But you are from Austin, Texas, and you attended the University of Texas. You spent a lot of time in Austin, where LBJ spent a great deal of time himself. Is this like a history you were marinated in, though? I mean, did you know a lot of this story even before you picked up Caro's book?
Well, I knew some of it. My father actually knew Senator Johnson casually for business reasons. My father, who was a pioneer in public television and radio, had been hired by the University of Texas to come to Austin and set up the first public television and radio station, not just in Austin, but in the entire Southwest. And job number one was to go to then Senator Johnson and get his permission to do so, because that new public television and radio station would have been a direct competitor with his own television radio empire, the somewhat controversial heart of his soon-to-be fortune. I'm pleased to say that that Senator Johnson not only gave his permission, but of course as president would go on to sign into law the bill that created national public television and radio in the country. So there's a family story about a visit to the ranch and the station wagon getting stuck in the mud, and Senator Johnson coming out in his Jeep and putting his shoulder to the rear of the wagon and pushing it back on the road. Honestly, it sounds a little apocryphal to me. I don't remember meeting Senator Johnson, so I asked my oldest brother if he did, and he said, "Oh yes." I said, "Well, what was he like?" He said, "Well, you know, it's funny. I don't remember Senator Johnson so much. What I remember of the event is how amazingly respectful our father was around this strange man." And I just always thought that was a very revealing. My father was a gentleman, but he was a very tough guy, too.
Hmm.
And
Proper deference for LBJ.
The proper deference, yes. So I grew up in Austin, in the Hill Country, not far from Johnson City. And in a family that felt very positively about LBJ for his support for what they were doing, and the 1964 election against Goldwater, I'm 11 years old. It's really the first election in which I actively participated. I volunteered. I wore my button. I had stickers on my books, you know, and got to stay up late and watch the returns come in. And we all cheered as the forces of darkness were vanquished. Then, you know, only a year and a half later, with our troop levels in Vietnam ramped up from 23,000 troops to almost 300,000 troops, and my oldest brother now approaching draft age, I had a very different feeling about President Johnson. And then 15 years later, as a young man with a family, an artist trying to make a living in this country, becoming increasingly aware of the social programs on which I and my family depended or benefited from, and realizing that they were actually a consequence of the legacy of LBJ's Great Society, I had yet a different feeling about him. And then when I actually began the serious process of researching these plays 6 years ago and really threw myself into all this material, not just Bob Caro's excellent work, but Doris Kearns Goodwin. And really, by this point, I've read all the major biographies of Lyndon Johnson and those close to him in his administration, numerous histories on various facets of the Great Society or the Vietnam War. As your listener who wrote in noted, all these tapes that are available, the Lyndon Baines Johnson Library in Austin, Texas has been very, very generous with their resources. you know, I've learned an extraordinary amount about Johnson and that time, and my appreciation for the complexity of the man, for his successes, for his failures, has really grown immeasurably over that time.
Let's take a call. We have Jamie in Medford on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Robert Schenken, the playwright of All the Way and The Great Society.
Good morning, Jeffrey. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning.
Well, first of all, a couple of images come to mind, pictures, as it were, of Lyndon Johnson. One was of him being sworn in shortly after Kennedy was assassinated on Air Force One, mm-hmm. raising the hand. And the second one was of, I believe he might have been at his ranch at one time, and he was picking up one of his dogs by both ears and holding it up in the air.
Famous moment, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, see, that's the things I think about Johnson. Now, nobody made a statue to a critic except for George Bernard Shaw, because he was also a playwright. And I would like you, Robert, to put on your imagine that you have a critical thinking cap here, so to speak, and tell me what you think of what was the least memorable thing that you would think about when you thought about Lyndon Baines Johnson, and I'll take the answers off the air.
Least memorable or least admirable?
Least admirable. Let's call it that.
Okay. Thanks, Jamie. Appreciate it.
Well, the man was capable of extraordinary acts of cruelty, almost sadism, towards staff members and people he worked with. I mean, this is kind of legendary. It's not a secret. I think his treatment of Vice President Hubert Humphrey was particularly shameful. So I guess that's what I would think of. You know, it's a little hard to understand the need on his part to humiliate those around him. I heard, or somebody wrote me a very interesting story in this vein, not quite so cruel. He was 6'4". I'm sorry, I'm blanking on his name, but he had some minor role in the success of the 64 Voting Rights Bill. And as a consequence, he got his picture taken with President Johnson in the Oval Office. And each individual, the photographer was there. They were doing a number of people. They would cross the Oval Office, and they would reach out. And the president would reach out, and they'd shake hands. Well, when he stepped forward to shake President Johnson's hand, Johnson grabbed his hand firmly and pulled it down and towards him sharply, forcing this 6'4" individual to literally sort of bend over so that in the photograph, Lyndon Johnson would be standing taller than him. I mean, you just think about the kind of petty nature of that and how revelatory that is about this man's absolute need, even in this really inconsequential moment, to dominate. Pretty interesting.
Let's take another call. Here's Scott in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with the playwright Robert Schenken.
Hi. First, congratulations on your well-deserved award. You commented a moment ago that Johnson treated Humphrey shamefully, and it's a point I agree with, but I felt like your portrayal of Humphrey in All the Way was itself kind of brutal, portraying him as kind of a tool and a fool, and I just wondered if you would comment on that.
Well, you know, I might take issue with your interpretation of my interpretation of Senator Humphrey, but because I'm very fond of Hubert, and of course he was a marvelous senator and a tireless advocate for civil rights. Here's a story I like about Vice President Humphrey. You know, when he first entered the Senate. As I said, he was a very strong advocate for civil rights, and he deliberately brought an African-American guest to the Senate dining room, the private dining room, which so upset Senator Russell that he cut Humphrey dead. He stopped talking to him and had everybody stop talking to him. And for Humphrey, who needed people and loved people so much, it was contact was oxygen. He was just devastated by this. And it was really Lyndon Johnson who explained to Hubert how he needed to mend this fence and make things work in the Senate. And Hubert listened and took that to heart. And eventually this rift was mended. And even though these gentlemen disagreed so strongly about civil rights, that Senator Russell would later secretly move some campaign funds over to Russell's Senator Humphrey's campaign, telling Lyndon, you know, we need more people like Hubert in the Senate. The kind of end to that story is Russell dies, of course, somewhat in disgrace. It's a terrible storm on the day of his funeral. Few people show up. Late that afternoon, there's a knock at the family door. They open it. Who should be there? But Vice President Humphrey, who's come down all the way from Washington, D.C. on a bus to pay his final respects. That's Senator Humphrey. He's an amazing man.
Much more to talk about with Robert Schenken about LBJ and his other work. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as well. Back with Robert Schenken and your phone calls and emails when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 10. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Robert Schenken, the Pulitzer and Tony Award-winning playwright. You know, the play for which he won the Tony Award for the best play on Broadway this year is All the Way, which was originally created at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival 2 years ago. The Oregon Shakespeare Festival will host the sequel, The Great Society, in its world premiere next month. That's why Robert's in Ashland with us in the studio. And you can join us at 800-838-3760 anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. So moving from All the Way to The Great Society, I mean, was the sequel always sort of blocked out in your head? I mean, if you had three more acts of All the Way, or two more acts, would this have been it?
Well, when I first made the decision to write about President Johnson, the question, of course, was, well, which part of the Johnson story do you want to tell? Because you could write a dozen plays in different aspects. I could write a very interesting play about his very first campaign, you know, the master politician as a young man, and that'd be an interesting story. Or I could have written a play about Johnson's first Senate race, which he lost in the last seconds with a handful of stolen votes by his opponent. Or I could have written a play about the second Senate race, the one he won by stealing the election with a handful of votes at the last second. What I settled on ultimately was the accidental president. But even then, I felt like, gosh, you know, the story, the full story is so interesting, and it would be so great to tell that. So, all right, for this commission, I will write this one play All the Way, November 63, November 64, and it'll be a standalone play. It'll be just fine by itself, but I will leave myself the opportunity, if there's interest, to follow up with a second play. And fortunately, there has been interest in the Seattle Repertory Theater in Seattle, Washington, has been kind enough to commission this second piece and generous enough with the Oregon Shakespeare Festival to allow them the first production, and here we are.
So it opens in Ashland in July, and then it'll open in Seattle in September?
No, actually, we open in Ashland in July and play through November 1st here in Ashland, and then we will have remounted with the Ashland Company and some Seattle actors, a new production of All the Way. And both shows then, All the Way and The Great Society, will move to Seattle, Washington, the Seattle Repertory Theater, and begin performances, I believe, in December.
From the perspective of somebody not directly involved in the production of All the Way or its transfer to Broadway, it seems lightning fast that, I mean, it was up on Broadway in March, and here it is June. Just a couple of days ago, it won the Tony Award for the best play on Broadway this year. Was it really, was for one thing, did the availability and interest of Bryan Cranston really help launch this thing into a higher orbit?
Oh, no question about it. You, the economics of Broadway are such these days, and this has been true for a decade or more now, you simply cannot do a play on Broadway, a new play, without the participation of a major star, someone who of marquee value. And we were extremely fortunate that Bryan Cranston was available and was looking, actually, to do theater, looking for something to do in art. This is Bryan Cranston's Broadway debut. There is, of course, a certain gamble involved in this process because a star you can't audition. You can have a conversation. You can have a coffee. You can you can talk about the play and how they see it. But really, it's a roll of the dice. You never know until you get into the room. Well, in this case, we were extremely fortunate. I mean, I always have thought of Brian as a terrific actor. But what you need for someone playing LBJ in these two plays, you know, you need you have to have at least two very different skill sets. You need an actor who is charming and funny and charismatic and very appealing, and you need someone who is utterly terrifying. And Bryan Cranston has all of that. If you look at his, you know, from the hapless father in Malcolm in the Middle to Walter White in Breaking Bad, that's the range right there. And so we were very fortunate to have Bryan, and he turned out to be not only a fantastic actor who very deservedly won all of the Best Actor Awards this season in New York, but also was just a terrific guy, a wonderful, collaborative, very modest, self-effacing, very professional artist, and a pleasure to work with.
You clearly accept the trade-offs that have to happen between art and commercial appeal. But, I mean, are there times when it just gets a little frustrating? Things that you think you might do if people weren't always looking at the dollars? I mean, I noticed that it was just a few days before the Tony Awards that there was the item about Breaking Bad made back, not Breaking Bad, All the Way made back its investment.
Well, that, of course, I'm actually very proud of that a word of explanation. You know, we had maybe 15 investors who ponied up a total of north of $3.5 million to put this play on Broadway. That's a big gamble. There's nothing that says that any of those people would ever see their money back. And not only did they make their investment back, they made it back within the middle of the run, and they will go on to make a profit. And I'm very proud of that. I'm very gratified. That makes it easier to do this kind of play in New York. I mean, this is a big play. It's 20 actors, 3 hours. Now, where that gets where the economics gets frustrating is, for example, in the time frame that one has to work with on Broadway. If a show runs longer than 3 hours, you go into overtime with all of the unions, and it gets very expensive very quickly, to the tune of $25,000 a week. In a 10-week run, that's $250,000. So I had to make decisions, aesthetic, artistic decisions about the play in order to accommodate this economic time frame in which I have to work. That's not so pleasant, but it's the way the game is played, and certainly everybody knows that going in.
Since you're there for the rehearsals in each version of the various premieres in Ashland, in Boston, and in New York, do you do much work in changing it? Is anything changing from production to production?
Oh, constantly. I did tremendous amount of revision work on the text from Ashland to Boston and from Boston to New York, and I was writing in New York up until the moment I literally had to stop. So that when the critics, the critic weeks, they come for an entire week before the opening, and the Thursday before the Friday they start coming, you have to freeze the show, what we call bird's eye the show, in order to print copies of the script for those critics who you know may want a copy to reference so that they get the dialogue correct.
Oh, they want to get the text right in there.
And I was writing right up until that day.
Wow. We have an email here from, not an email, I'm sorry, a phone call here from Steve and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Robert Schenken, the playwright from All the Way and The Great Society.
Howdy, this is really a pleasure. I thought the war in Vietnam and the streets of Portland and Eugene, and with the marchers at least, there was almost a universal hatred of LBJ. Hey, LBJ, how many kids have you killed today? And so on. And it just surpassed anything I'd seen to that time in terms of, you know, anyone hating head of our country. And I was wondering, what you think there was about Johnson's personality, his approaches, whatever, that created this hatred of him.
All right. Thanks for that, Steve.
Well, you know, the Vietnam War became such a controversial issue, and it shattered the Democratic Alliance. It split the country. It had over 50,000 American dead, hundreds of thousands wounded, not to mention over a million Vietnamese killed and wounded. It was a terrible, terrible event. And from Johnson, you know, in terms of Johnson's participation in this, you can't cut the man any slack. The lying about Vietnam started very early, the lying to Congress, the lying to the American people. And so not only did people feel betrayed in that sense, but it was very difficult to really make the case for Vietnam. I think in many ways Lyndon Johnson, who never thought of himself as a foreign policy specialist, treated it as a domestic political issue, at least initially. It was this feeling on his part that he needed to be careful, that he couldn't be outflanked on the right by the conservative faction, first in the election against Goldwater and then later in Congress. So he needed to project this kind of muscular, robust American military presence. He knew from the beginning, or there were certainly people there to say that this is not a war we can win. He was looking for a way to negotiate out. What he really cared about was his domestic agenda, and I think there was a certain kind of whistling past the graveyard in terms of Vietnam, this sense that, well, you know, if I can just keep this ball in the air long enough to get my Great Society programs passed, and then we'll just make a deal. We'll make a deal with the North Vietnamese, and then everything will be all right. And as a fundamental misunderstanding, not just on Johnson's part, of course, but on many people, about what this war was to the North Vietnamese. This was not simply part of some great international communist program, but for them it was a war of national liberation, and they weren't interested in negotiating. That's not what they were there for. And there are just so many tragic mistakes, misunderstandings, and choices associated with the Johnson administration in this regard. Of course, it does bear pointing out that Johnson leaves office, and the next president, Richard Nixon, comes in with his secret plan for peace, and the war continues for another 7 years. So there's a lot of blame to go around, but Johnson certainly deservedly comes in for his share.
Absolutely, for the escalation. Jenny in Roseburg emails, the play all the way just blew me away when I saw it in Ashland, but the run was over and all I could do was tell people as best I could what a great play I'd seen. I'm so pleased with its success, but it's running 3,000 miles away. Is there any chance the play will be recorded and offered for online viewing? She adds, I'd love it if there was some kind of Netflix for plays so rural folks or anyone who missed a great play could go see it.
Wouldn't that be a great idea? I love that notion. I'm sorry, the play All the Way is being remounted, as I alluded to earlier, and will be seen in Seattle, Washington. So if you can get up to Seattle, there is an opportunity to see it there.
So a 7-hour drive, Jenny, instead of having to go across the country.
And there is, I should say, that there is interest in a film or TV adaptation from many different quarters, and I imagine that at some point we will make a deal, and I will adapt this material for another medium. It won't be the same as a play, but it will have a very interesting iteration there as well.
Got a couple minutes left, and I got a couple more questions. One of them is, I understand some prominent members of Congress saw the play in New York. Are you hoping they learned something?
This is really one of the fascinating and more gratifying things about the run, is that this play All the Way really entered the national consciousness, and particularly in the political class. The day of the Tonys, at that matinee, former President Clinton, Madam Secretary Hillary Clinton, and their daughter came and saw the show and spent 30 minutes afterwards talking about how important this story about civil rights, how hard that struggle was, and how hard it is today. But they were hardly alone. Nancy Pelosi, Senate Minority Leader, has seen the play 3 times. Harry, the House of Representatives, leader, also seen the play. Numerous congressmen and women, representatives, both at the state, local, and federal level, have made the trek down to Washington, D.C. The Attorney General of the United States, Eric Holder, came and saw the play. Very, very gratifying in that regard.
How much does All the Way underscore Johnson's essentially brave political move? I mean, knowing that by signing civil rights legislation, he was signing away the South voting for Democrats in the future.
I give him full credit there. I know some people, you know, think his support of civil rights was purely political and all about legacy building. And my personal view on that is that no, the man really cared about civil rights. He did, actually, and this was personal to him, and I think he deserves all the credit due for that. It was not a no-brainer, and it was certainly not an easy task. President Kennedy had failed miserably in this regard. I think it took somebody like President Johnson to make this happen. I'm not sure there's anybody who could have made it happen other than LBJ.
Robert Shankin has been our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He is the playwright of All the Way, which debuted at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival 2 years ago and won the award for Best Play, the Tony Award for Best Play on Broadway just a few days ago. The sequel to it, The Great Society, debuts at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival in July, next month. Robert Shankin, thanks so much for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
It's great to have you. Monday on the Jefferson Exchange, we'll talk about the Square Mile Project, a way to examine the history of an area around you, just in square mile sections. We will talk to the archaeologist Chelsea Rose at 8:30 from Southern Oregon University about some national attention she's been gaining. And then at 9 o'clock, we'll talk to the Ashland author Greta Beigel about her book Kvetch, One Bitch of a Life. That's coming up Monday on the Jefferson Exchange. Our producer is Charlotte Duren. Our student assistant is Megan Mercier. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks so much for listening. Please join us again Monday at 8 for another edition of the Jefferson Exchange here on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. And have a great weekend.